This final session this morning will be about industrial perspectives. I'm Vince Stanford from NIST, and the Huntley Technologies, Bernard Wignall, will give the first presentation.
Right, I think the first thing I'm going to do is make a series of apologies. Firstly, it's going to be quite a short presentation. I had a little bit more notice than some of our speakers yesterday who were called up from the floor without knowing about it, but not a lot more notice. So I've just pulled a few slides in just to sort of give us a sort of framework, but I think possibly if I go through things from to give us a context, then maybe we can have a little bit of a discussion if we've got time afterwards, if I'm shorter than the time we've got. The other thing is I'm going to confuse you all because you'll see that I'm Corporate Development Director of Huntley Technology PLC. Everything you see after this will be Huntley Healthcare because that's the name we trade under. Huntley Technology is the holding company and is only a few people work for it. Most of them are accountants. I'm an exception in that case. But it does mean that in our offices, it's like living on another planet. I think if we have an industrial perspective, I think the thing that's really coming out of all this is that it's, and my perspective is, that it's an awfully lot different to get a couple of grad students to wire up a lab, to think about installing, maintaining, and being responsible for several thousand systems in the field. And that is the transition that has to be made. And we had a brief discussion about it yesterday, where the question was, why aren't these things being implemented? And I think the answer, we gave some of the answers then. I think the other observation I've got is that because you're pushing the boundaries out all the time, systems become complex. Soon as we start looking at implementation, we start cutting things off, making them simpler. Every piece I can take out of a system is a cost saving as long as I can get the functionality. It's one thing that's less likely to go wrong. If I can speed up installation by half an hour, it becomes a practical issue. So almost there's things blow up into a big system. You come along, talk to us about what we can do in terms of bringing it out to the marketplace, and we start saying, well, we won't have that. We'll have to take this. We can see a computer, working bit of software running this system quite happily in a trial situation, and we say, well, it's 27,000 lines long, of which two-thirds are redundant, but the problem is we don't know which two-thirds. And also, because of the regulatory issues, we need to be able to test that software. So often we have to go right back, we have to start again. And this is, to some extent, what we've done taking the Brunel Millennium Homes product and translating it into what I'm going to talk about briefly now. I'm going to talk a little bit about Huntley Healthcare, not really just as a company, a sort of push for the company, but because I think a lot of what I'm going to talk about in terms of what we do relate very much to how we've come into the marketplace. A $250 million turnover company based in the UK. I say that with some trepidation as I'm being followed by somebody from GE, and that's probably about the size of their CEO's petty cash fund. We're an amalgamation of different companies that have come together under the Huntley name. And one of the companies particularly goes back over 100 years. And at one time, it specialized in outfitting ships. And one of them was, yes, the Titanic. So we do have quite a bit of history.
Like a one-use camera.
Yes. They did make stuff for other ships that lasted a bit longer. So. We started very much as a manufacturing company, and most of our divisions are manufacturing divisions. Our biggest area is probably hospital and specialist beds, both the hospital and community specialist for community. We make a lot of pressure care equipment, and that's quite relevant to, strangely enough, to some of the things we're looking at in terms of the business planning for this exercise. We have got a very high-tech division which makes diagnostic and monitoring equipment. We're actually the largest, world's largest manufacturing of handheld Dopplers for obstetric and vascular use. We make furniture, both for hospital and home care homes, and we actually try and put some science into that. Actually, the first company to actually bring out a set of chairs for hospitals, which are anthropomorphic, have anthropomorphic measurements built into them, so we can actually fit people comfortably without having to put chair raises and things. We do specialist seating, moving and handling, and treatment couches. So we've got a broad range of products of quite varied nature. The other important thing is we have quite a large service provision. We have rental programs. We manage equipment for hospitals. If a hospital wants, rather than buy beds, we'll just go in and manage the provision of beds for them. They remain our property, but we just have to have them there, you know, make sure they're working. We started hit penalty clauses if a bed stays out of action for more than about 4 hours. So we quite often have our own technicians in the hospital. We have a division which looks at several different software packages for assessment of patients. We actually are contracted to do any pressure care assessments for about a quarter of the Dutch population. If they need it, we would send a nurse in to do it and report back to the insurance company. We provide, we will go into a hospital and audit various functions for them to give them baselines for their any sort of, say, how they're using pressure care equipment, whether they can put a better strategy in, which will save them money. And we can also help them manage the equipment within the hospital and relate what equipment they're using to the actual patient needs. And we also have, we're the largest manager, sort of third-party manager, of community equipment stores in the UK. UK operations, well, we have 4 manufacturing sites. More interestingly, we have 13 rental and service depots across the country. We run a 24/7 call centre, and something maybe of interest to you, we have about a $7 million R&D budget. Overseas, we manufacture in the US, Australia, and South Africa. We have about 15 subsidiaries and representation in about 100 countries. This is really the driver that got us into this area. In April 2002, the government made the statement that they were going to put whatever it took, I think was basically the phrase they used, into the system to allow 100,000 people extra to stay at home. Now, if you think of the alternative to staying at home is to go into care, into a care home. Average cost of that probably about £300 a week minimum. So you can see the actual amount of money involved in keeping, you know, that's at stake. You're talking about £30 million a week would be the sort of targets. The potential amount of money sloshing around the system if they don't do that. So interesting from a commercial point of view. However, I think we've been looking here at a lot of technology, and we've possibly moved away from one of the fundamental questions, which is what do we need to do? And I think that's to cost-effectively provide a physical environment which, together with the appropriate health and social care, will allow someone to be supported at home so they're safe, so secure, safe, and able to function to the best of their ability. Now, no technology mentioned there. And I think that's quite important, because that's what we want to do. We'll use technology, but that's our objective. When we started to look at this, we said, right, well, what's involved in keeping people at home? And we sort of started drawing on whiteboards and came up with really this sort of scenario. We've got it driven, it's driven by a perceived need. Somebody says, something's wrong, we need to do something about it. coming from that is a process of assessment. We need to know what is the problem and what can be done about it. That's done by the healthcare and social care professionals often. They provide a care plan which can involve virtually any of these items in any sort of mix as well. That is fragmented. You'll find that a lot of those things will come from different divisions, they'll come from different organisations within health and social care, they'll come from different manufacturers, some will be contracted out to third-party providers. And it's a real dog's dinner. You know, and people in the community find it a real problem to put all these together. And so that's possibly the key to it. The other thing is quite interesting when you look at that, is that Huntley is one of the very few companies that does most of this. Our diagnostics division has telecare ready or telemedicine enabled monitoring systems. We can go in, we can easily hook up a home monitoring system through to whatever call centre you want. We're partners in the Millennium Homes project, so we had available the idea of activity monitoring and client communications. We already provide masses of medical equipment into the community. We don't do nursing and personal care at the moment. Environmental sensing, again, came out of Millennium Homes. Environmental control, we actually, our community equipment stores do quite a bit of that. They install it. We don't manufacture it, but we install it and source it and become a provider for it. Again, daily living and adaptations and aids to daily living. So we looked at that and thought, well, we've got the bits. What can we do to put it together? And so what we came up with was a process diagram more than really anything else, which was to look at taking the Millennium Homes infrastructure, which gives us the local interpretation, validation and controls, and starts to link these together into an integrated package, which I think is the real thing, that you're beginning to look at a whole system. So you can take a systems approach to it. Try and keep everything within the home as much as possible, but allow external communications, which will then feed back into both performance indicators. It will start external care processes if something goes wrong. Again, we tap into whatever is there at the time provided by the local healthcare community. But that begins to look much more like something that's a package that we can go to someone and say, look, we can keep someone at home. We need to put this in place. What we came up with was a system called Insight, and the ASE stands for Active Support Environment. We don't like the term smart house smart home, because I don't think that's quite what we're doing. We're not doing telecare, we're not doing assisted living, though it's part of it. We're not doing smart homes, because I think they're much better environment to do it. And again, it's not just a product, it's a process. We start off with assessment. We look, it's person-centered. The systems are configured for individuals. So we'll go in and we want to find out what the person feels about. What the person is worried about, what the carers are worried about, because those are the things that put people into care. Often not a physical problem. It's actual fear of things. So what we do is we'll go in, we'll do a thorough assessment, we'll also assess the house. We'll put together a plan of how we can install any sensors and things. We can also look at any other aids and adaptations, fall prevention programs, really the whole package of things to keep people at home. Once that's installed, we'll then spend quite a bit of time working with the occupant, getting them used to the system and trying to get them to get them happy with what's happening. We'll monitor for a while, compare the data with what they've told us they do, and then run the system live so that the whole system starts talking. I'm not going to talk too much about what the system does. I think Heinz Wolf gave a fairly good description yesterday. We've extended it in some areas, but not too drastically at the moment. Mediation, again, we talked about that yesterday. If necessary, we can intervene because we have things like X10 controllers built into the system, so we can switch things on, switch things off. We try to minimize that, but there are cases like lights getting on when you get out of bed are probably a good idea to do rather than to tell people to do. If we reach a point where we have to call for outside the help, the system will do it according to the wishes of the person. The person owns this. We spend a lot of time talking to the people about what they want it to do. You know, it is going to do what they want. You know, when do you want to get up in the morning? When would you feel that somebody should know if you can't get up in the morning? You know, it's not a prescriptive, you know, well, we'll get so that if you're in bed half an hour after you were in bed late yesterday, we'll sort of learn from that and do it. We actually ask them and try to get that input into the system. Reassessment. Now, this, I think, is probably one of the keys to how we think this is going to really work well. People change. Situations change. Let's take an example that somebody normally gets up at 8 o'clock, and they've said, well, if I'm not out of bed by 9:30, you know, I think possibly just see if I'm all right. And we start doing that, and then we find 5 days in a row, we're telephone by the bed's ringing and saying, are you all right? Yes, fine. You know. And we wonder why. So this would trigger a reassessment. Either, most cases, one of our own people would go along, talk to the people, see what was happening. Might be the healthcare, social care professional, depending on what arrangement we'd made. But the key then is there might be two options. Their sons just bought them a new television for their bedroom, so they used to get up and watch television in the living room at 9 o'clock. Now they can do it in bed, so they don't need to get up. In that case, we want to say, well, when do you want this phone to start ringing now? Oh, make it 11. So, fine. We have to put that in, or else it becomes a nuisance. Very, very difficult to automate systems to cope with people's changing behaviour. However, we might go in and find there's no real reason that they're, you know, no obvious reason that they're getting up an hour or so later. We'd be a bit worried, and we maybe talk to the healthcare professional and say, this is happening. And that could lead to something like a diagnosis of depression or anxiety. But what it means is that we're catching things earlier, before the person maybe starts thinking, I have to do something. You know, the process, you know, by a very simple thing of bringing the contact. We're not avoiding human contact. What we're trying to do is bring it in at the appropriate time. And I think that's the key thing to this. You can automate things too much, and what we want to try and do is get a balance between the system helping people do what they should be doing anyway. So that's a real overview of the system. I said I'd talk about this as a business perspective. The business model is that it's person-centered, assessment-based. We provide the support both for the professionals and the clients. So we will have people out there who will facilitate the assessment. We'll go in with the people, the healthcare professionals, because don't forget, this is brand new to them. You know, if they'd sat, most healthcare professionals sitting in a meeting like this would have been going, and I'm supposed to go out and do this. You know, I'm supposed to cope with this. You know, it's a big jump. Even our system, which is relatively straightforward, it's a big jump for most healthcare professionals who are trained on, you know, much simpler systems. So we go out, we'll help them with the assessment. Their clinical responsibility. We will help them understand what we can do, what the capabilities of the system are, how much it can help the person, because our people will be may not be fully trained OTs, but they will be equivalent to an assistant, an OT assistant. The other thing is that this is going to be quite a big culture shock, although it's pretty invisible. You know, all you're seeing is about the same as you get from a burglar alarm going into the house. It's quite a big culture shock for the people who live there. You know, the phone's going to start ringing. You know, voices are going to come and telling them to do things or asking if they're all right. Now, we've got to try and help them through that. So a lot, the same person doing the assessment will get to build up a relationship with a group of people to actually get them used to using it, introduce them maybe to other people, take them to situations where, you know, trial centres where it's already installed so they can get used to seeing it. So if you like, we can install the equipment. We've also got to install the occupant into the system. And that's again, not a totally trivial task. So we're moving back to the people part of it again, not the technology. We have recognised that the system is applicable to quite a wide range of different client groups. And that is good in some ways, bad in another, because the system's been designed extremely flexible. The software is designed so we can do high-level changes in using a sort of simple scripting language, so we can actually change the way it works for different groups. And we're also looking to making sure that our interfaces can be used for hearing impaired and visually impaired people as well. So we can cope with that. But what we're finding is that, as well as the sort of frail elderly way we're starting to look at it, we're getting tremendous pressures to start looking at early dementia. And that's a whole different set of issues. I mean, some of the work you've been doing, we have to be very careful about how we get the system to talk, well, interface with the people. Tremendous potential, even in terms of, say, resetting clocks, so that people's mental clock stays more or less on the right time. We think some of the work's been done can help with that. We've got a lot of interest from learning disability groups who have there's a tremendous pressure for people to be in the community, but safety issues there are such that people having to have 24-hour care where they don't really need it. So you've got a very expensive carer sitting there watching television with the person. And that sort of area, they're saying, we'd like to try this to see if we can get the security on our own minds that they're happy to be on their own. So it's being extended to different client groups as we learn how to do it. We do provide 24/7 service. It can be revenue based, so the access to it is easy. If you want it on a weekly payment, we will do it. So we need to make this access to the, we need to make it scalable, I think, which is something I said. It's not a big bang, it's not a big investment. It can be paid for as people need it. We've made a decision that if people came to us and said, we want the lot, in the same way as it's a nursing home, we could actually provide the care elements as well. Assessment, technology, equipment, and the care as a package. So it's effectively the same as the easiest thing administratively within a social services department is to sign the bit of paper which sends someone to a care home, because it's one payment sent to one place. If we have the option of saying, well, we can care for somebody at home on that basis without all the complexity and into you know, arguments between housing, social services, all the different agencies that are involved, we can get a pickup there. So it's not just the technology. And I think that's the end, isn't it? Yeah. I think what comes out of that, and this is where it becomes interesting, is that one, because we're out there, the only reason we can do that is we do most of it anyway. If you try and put this together from scratch, and this is what you may be thinking about if you're approaching companies and saying, look, we'd like to have, we've got a tremendously good idea, you know, how do we implement this? And they say, well, we've got to look at first of all 24/7 cover, we've got to look at rolling this out across the country, we've got to employ you know, a whole raft of different people to do this, we've got to have a call centre. It becomes a massive investment. As it is, we've been able to slot this in alongside a lot of things we do, so that we've been able to get away with it. You know, if I came to my CEO with this as a proposition and we weren't doing it, we'd have never done it, because it's too difficult. So building a company starting from scratch would find it difficult. We're able to build on a lot of other things. But because the other thing is that because it's based on the original premise. We want to keep people at home and provide the systems to it. It is not tied to any particular technology. We're not committed to only doing one particular technology to do it. Two things. One, we can integrate good ideas into it. We can use our system as a platform and then integrate things into it in order to get, because as I say, we're trying to make the software very flexible, so we can add additional functionality to it. And that makes it interesting in terms of commercialization of good academic ideas, because there's a system out there where you can immediately start looking at, you know, maybe 1,000 systems potentially ready to use, you know, who could find this, whatever technique it was, valuable. It means that where somebody's needs are very different, we would look at very different technologies. We're used to working, as Oliver was saying, we're really looking at systems integration and the service provision rolled into one, which is quite unusual. But we can do it. We're not totally wedded to our own equipment. So that's really one thing, that we're always interested in good ideas, and probably we can integrate them into what we're doing, into our service operation, without the massive investment that you might find in other areas, other companies need. The other thing is, from a research point of view, two things really. One, that we will be asking people who are getting these systems, we give them a lot of choices about how things are handled. One of the things we're going to ask is if we can use anonymized data for research. So one of the things is that we should be building a very large database of activity in a fairly accessible form as these systems go in. And that we are quite happy to talk to people about how it can be exploited. The other thing is that we funded a research institute at Brunel University, really to focus on this, developing this sort of, if you like, not just the technology, but the whole environment of the technology as well. And that we're hoping to get to bring other groups in, to cooperate with them, to actually use it as a hub to go out and get funding. So again, really we're happy to talk to anybody about sort of research collaboration as well. Okay, thank you very much.
So I think some of the things you see here is that these are complex systems and there are a lot of very large scalability issues. Are there a couple of questions?
Very quickly, Bernard. Do you find when you move into this sort of business that there's a very high fixed cost that you have to take on board to start off with? So there's a risk of bearing quite a lot of cost before you actually get the installed base of customers.
In this case, actually, no, because what the great thing about this system is it's based on, it is a systems integration system, so we've no real, it's an off-the-shelf basic unit that we're using. It's essentially a, we're going to hear more about it in a minute, but it's effectively a commercial security alarm, which is the channel for all the information, and then we process it afterwards. So even the basic development costs have not been that high, thank goodness. And so the real costs in this are the infrastructure, and a lot of those existed anyway.